Ability of spiritual realization to perfect the highest understanding of self-realization is to understand that person is the source of all existence. And it comes down to practicality. It's a very practical thing. Just like everybody, you know, in society we say love is very important. There should be loving relationships, being virtuous, you see. This is considered a very, very important thing. But on this, in the bhakti understanding of self-realization, those things are very predominant, you see. Because in the impersonal conception, we're not really persons, it's just all the oneness. So where's the scope for a personal, for loving relationships? It's all one. See, love means two, me and you, right? So if it's all one, there's no love. If I'm you and you are me, then we can't have a loving relationship because we don't really exist as individual persons. That's why Krishna consciousness is very wonderful, you see. Because in Krishna consciousness, you actually learn how to love, how to have loving relationships. Of course, we're doing a pretty bad job of it. We're all a bunch of mundane neophytes, you know. We have our selfishness, our ego trips. We're doing a rotten job of it, you know. Let's be honest, pretty rotten job. But the actual perfection is when you actually awaken feelings of love for that Supreme Person as the source of all existence, then that love translates into perfect loving relationships with everyone, with the devotees, with the non-devotees, even with the dogs. Even the dog on the street. You may say, dog, aren't they dirty? But there's a nice story in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I told you the story yesterday. This is what he takes his dog and marries him. It's very special. I told him the story about the dog from Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the old days in India, they didn't have, you know, Indian airlines, or they didn't have, you know, buses or trains. Indian railways didn't exist. All they had was either ox cart or walking. That was the way you travel around India, either by foot or by ox cart. So every year, of course, Lord Chaitanya is going to Jagannath Puri. It's a big, huge festival. Oh, we're going to be with Lord Chaitanya and Puri. So every year, a whole bunch of devotees would come from Mayapur and they go to Jagannath Puri. And there was one really wealthy devotee, Shivananda Singh. So he kind of helped out those who couldn't really afford the trip. Sometimes it happens, some of the devotees can't afford to go to Mayapur, and devotees will donate some money to their plane fare. It's kind of like that, you know. So, Shivananda Singh was funding the whole thing. Whatever was lacking, he covered all of it, you know, prasadam, whatever was necessary in the trip. So as they were walking down the road to Mayapur, you know, they must have had a nice kirtan and walking down the road. Some dog tagged along with them. He was attracted to the pilgrim party. Some dogs were tagging along with them. And one day the dog was... let's go to the boat first. They came to a river crossing, and the boatmen don't give... That's how they earn a living. They charge a fee for everybody in the boat. So the dog jumps in the boat, and the boat says, "The dog can't come here unless you pay for his fee." So Shivananda Singh paid for the dog to go on the boat also. And so the days are going by, the dog keeps traveling. One day the dog was not around, and Shivananda Singh, and someone said, "Where's the dog? Where's the dog?" He actually fasted because he was concerned, "Where's the dog?" He fasted out of concern, "Where's the dog?" He said. So the dog never showed. And what happened to the dog? They got to Jagannath Puri, and they met Lord Chaitanya. The dog got there first. He was already there with Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, you know, the green coconut pulp, you know, he was throwing him the pulp from the green coconut, and the dog was going, "Haribo, Haribo." So the barking was going, "Haribo." And then the dog wasn't around anymore. Something happened to him. He had achieved the spiritual world. So, this is actual Krishna consciousness, you see.
Krishna consciousness,
real Krishna consciousness, not our the pseudo of Krishna consciousness of us neophytes, you see. But real Krishna consciousness means perfection of love, you see. Because you love that person, it's the source of all existence. You automatically love all his children also, you see. Prabhupada, back to the dog example, Prabhupada he often quoted a famous English saying, if you love me, love my dog. So the devotees say they're the dogs of God. If I'm rude to the devotee and I say I'm Krishna conscious, I'm not Krishna conscious. You understand? I can't be rude to a devotee and be in love and be a devotee of Krishna. That means I'm not really a devotee, I'm just a pseudo devotee. I actually know how to give loving relationships to the devotees, then my Krishna consciousness is starting to wake up a little bit, isn't it? This is the beauty of Vaishnava association and preaching, because actually the whole world are devotees, they just don't realize it. Not that I love the devotees and I hate the non-devotees. That's not Krishna consciousness. A true devotee is an ocean of mercy. He has compassion for even a little ant. Everyone knows that story, a very nice story that Madhvacharya the hunter, you see. He was trained by his father, my dear son, this is how you maintain yourself and your family, you kill the animals. And by the way, what we do in our family line is you kill them half dead, and watch them flapping in agony as they slowly die, and have fun watching it. That's how his dad trained him. Kill the animal half dead, and then enjoy and have a good laugh as you watch him die in great agony and pain. That's what his father taught him. So he did that. The only education he got was from his father. He lived in the forest. He didn't go to school anywhere. He didn't, you know, didn't go to the temple to hear any classes on the Bhagavatam or anything like that. He just trained by his father. He said, what do you do, son? So the Narada Muni came through the forest. He noticed, what is this, hunter? He's killing the animals half dead and laughing sadistically as they writhe in agony. What is this nonsense? He said, you should kill them full. Narada Muni told him to kill the animals full. Yeah, he did. That was a teaching method. You kill them full. Why are you killing them half dead? You should kill them full. He said, okay, I'll kill them full. And then Narada said, but actually better than that, just give me your bow. And Narada broke it. He took away his livelihood. He said, now, you and your wife, you just go, you get one hut, and you chant Hare Krishna. Don't worry about your eatables. I will send all your eatables to you. I'll cover your maintenance. Don't worry about it. I've broken your bow, but I'm going to cover your maintenance. I've taken away your income, but don't worry, I'll provide whatever you need. I'll send everything to you. So he and his wife, he said, you worship the Tulsi and you chant Hare Krishna, and everything I will send to you. So they did that, and all the hunters become a sadhu. And all the village come, they bring the rice, the fruits, the dal, the flour, they bought everything, they had this huge quantity, they had to start a food for life program, they had too much for themselves. So then Narada Muni, you know, he's flying around on Narada Muni Airlines. He didn't require, you know, a ticket on Qantas Airlines. He just flies through the sky, and he had a side cook named, what was the side cook's name? Parvatmani. Yeah. Actually, I had a godbrother, Parvatmani. But anyway, so he and Parvatmani were just flying. He said, why don't we go check out how my disciple Murgari is doing? So they came in for a landing by the hut of Murgari, and he saw them. So what do you do when you see your Guru Maharaj immediately? Dandavat. That's the etiquette. So, but he didn't do dandavat immediately. What's going on here? He was going like this. What's going on? And actually, there was ants on the ground. So he was very carefully picking up the ants, not to hurt them. They might offer his dandavas on top of a little man. So just see the reformed character of somebody who has actually become Krishna conscious. He's so concerned that I don't even want to hurt a little tiny ant, you see. So we devotees, those who are trying, always we're trying to be devotees, so we can judge how much we are actually awakening Krishna consciousness by how much we don't want to hurt anybody, you see. It's like in Buddhism, non-violence, you see. Devotee is automatically the best Buddhist. Because he is non-violent, he does not hurt any living creature. He's very, very gentle. As far as possible, he avoids harming any creature. This is Krishna consciousness, you see. He's full of compassion, full of mercy. So this is a very nice verse here, this Tattaya Kampam Susamikshamano verse. Very, very nice. Devotee, he takes whatever misfortune he's suffering, he doesn't blame Krishna, but why are you doing this to me, Krishna? And he understands, this is a minimization of what I actually deserve because of my past impious activities. Krishna has mercifully minimized the reactions I should be getting, you see. Because I chanted his name, I bowed down to him, Krishna is very kindly has minimized reactions from my past sins. So this way a devotee doesn't blame God. The God, you're being cruel to me, why are you doing this to me, why are you doing that to me? The devotee doesn't see Krishna like that. Krishna is not cruel. Krishna is all merciful. Krishna is actually doing everything to benefit all of us at every minute, every living minute. The devotees, the non-devotees, everyone is the dear child of Krishna. Every living entity is Krishna's dear child. As a parent is very affectionate towards his children, Krishna also is very affectionate towards every single living entity throughout all of existence. So whatever misfortune we're experiencing is actually a benefit for to purify us from past sinful reactions and help us to come back to Krishna. A devotee sees the loving hand of Krishna at every step. He never thinks God is being cruel to me. He's seeing how Krishna has minimized the reactions from my previous sins. Whatever I do receive, that token reaction, which is not really a full reaction, whatever reaction I'm receiving is a mere token of what I actually deserve, but that token is there to help me become sober on this pathway back to home, back to Godhead. So we will very soberly, very seriously try to understand this great merciful personality that we can logically prove his existence. He's not a myth. God is not a myth. There has to be a person behind this thing. It can't go on by chance, or as you can't manifest out of nothing. It's not possible. You can't get something out of nothing. It's never been done. You can't do it in a laboratory. It's not that everything popped out of nothing. There was a supreme person there, it was the source of everything. A beautiful, loving person who wants the best of happiness with each and every one of us. So this material existence is simply a training ground to help us come back to our original pure state of consciousness. If there's any questions, I can try to answer them. I don't know if they have any questions. This process is actually a simply wonderful process. Yes?
You mentioned in your class the perfection of bhakti is to love God. What if we don't love ourselves? How do we love someone else, let alone God?
If I don't love myself, then how I can love God? Well, actually, it is important to love yourself. Loving yourself means you want the best for yourself. So, we all start, in the material, we all start from that position, myself. So, if I truly love myself, then I want to do the best for myself. So I should find out whether it's the best thing for myself. How can I achieve perfect happiness? How can I achieve perfect compassion for all, starting with myself? That's one of them. So that is called, what is my highest self-interest? Dhamma uses that term. So we are self-interested. What is the most beneficial thing for me? That was my quest as a youth. And I became attracted to this whole idea of self-realization. Because I heard that's... I remember when I was in I was a trauma student at the University of Texas, and I was really depressed. I was a very miserable young man. And I was walking in the hall in the trauma department, and somebody said, "How are you doing?" I said, "I'm really depressed." They said, "Don't say that! You're not allowed to be honest here. We have to fake it. You know, it's a drama department. We're all studying to be actors, right? So you got to act. Not only on the stage, but even when you're coming to school here, you got to keep up the act. Yeah, I'm feeling great." But then one of my fellow drama students, I was in the break room, you know. I actually contacted him on email. I remembered his name and I found him on the internet and contacted him. He told me about something called self-realization, where you can achieve spiritual enlightenment. Well, that sounds interesting. Because being a drama student, of course, in the beginning I was all fired up, you know. I was thinking, "I'm going to be an actor, yeah, yeah." I had a little song I would sing on the way to school every day. "I'm going to be an actor." All fired up, you know. But then one of the graduates from the union, this is one of the leading drama schools in all the United States, the University of Texas Drama Department, is a big, big drama school, very big drama school. So one of our graduates who became successful in the world of drama told us what it was like. He came back to tell us, and I went, "Oh my God, that's not for me." So my little "I am an actor" bubble was popped. What am I going to do now? But then I forget his name just now, but he told me about self-realization. So I began the practice of self-realization. Because I wanted to get to that state of unlimited happiness. And so I began that in the fall of 67. It took me, about 4 years of intense struggle, searching. And I actually got what I understood as the perfection of self-realization, Krishna consciousness. But actually, one has to actually, that is loving oneself. What is my highest self-interest? How will I become most benefited? And once you understand that and you achieve that, then you can act, once you achieve your own highest self-interest, then you can act the highest self-interest of all. Until you're actually situated yourself in the perfection of realization. What you may share with others, but you're sharing your own problems, basically, with others. Of course, there's something that's called commiserating. "I'm miserable, you're miserable. You know, let's love each other in spite of our misery." There's something there. But one who has actually achieved the perfection of consciousness has understood what is actually my highest self-interest, hasn't actually achieved it, or at least gotten the key to open that door, is in the process of opening the door. That person can act more compassionately and more beneficially for others. In other words, you can be a humanitarian person, trying to help others, but because you don't perfectly understand your own highest self-interest, in your humanitarianism, you may do sometimes things that are not actually beneficial for their highest self-interest. Even though you want to, you don't really know it. But one who has actually achieved the perfection of his self-interest, he can now act in the highest self-interest of all. In other words, if I'm just on the level of humanitarianism, I can feed you when you're hungry, but can I liberate you from debt? I can feed you while you're dying, but I can't save you from death. But a person who has actually become spiritually awakened, he can feed you while you're hungry and liberate you from death. You see, there's a difference. So, to actually perfect your own love for yourself by coming to the perfection of consciousness, then it puts you in a position you can be the best lover. This, like it is stated, Sudridam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the best friend of all living beings. His devotee also is Sudridam Sarvabhutanam. So, we neophytes, we haven't mastered it yet, you know. Yeah, those kindies or whatever, you know. But actually, we are also currently, if you look at it in the highest sense, we're still material desires. We know Krishna is God, but still we're holding on to material desires. And that way, we're worse than them. Because I know the truth, but I'm still running after my ends. You know, I know better. They don't know better. But I know better, but I'm still attracted. So actually, in that sense, I'm worse than them, you see? So a devotee actually cultivates, the highest level of devotee is cultivate the mood that they are higher than me. That's called uttamadikari. He cultivates them, they are higher than me. But I must serve them, you see? By being in the mouth of Krishna. So that's the answer, yes. Loving yourself, you must learn, you must perfect the art of loving yourself.
Don't you know?
Yes.
Don't you need to know first who you are, then you can really love?
Yeah, we have to know who you are. If I think I'm the body or I'm the mind, I'm just loving my body, you know. You have to love yourself, you have to know what is itself. But only who I actually am, and how I can love myself. If I think I'm the body, then loving myself is sense gratification, you know. Gratifying my senses to the max. That's loving myself. But that simply takes you from another body, another body, another body, another body. So if you're really going to love yourself, you have to first of all understand who you actually are. That can be analyzed. You can psychoanalyze yourself and see, well, when I was little, you know, every minute, the chemicals in this body are changing. The example I give is the Mississippi River in the U.S. We have a famous river. Here you have the Yarra River. We have the Mississippi in the U.S. The Ohio River and the Missouri River feed into it. It's a big, huge river. And then it dumps into the Gulf of Mexico. So there's so many water molecules flowing through it. If I grab a handful of water, I can say, this is Mississippi River, but actually it's a mixture of Ohio and Missouri. And then tomorrow it's Gulf of Mexico. So this body is just a conglomeration of chemicals. So is it me? Here we are in the room. I'm exhaling, you're inhaling. We're all exhaling and inhaling. What you thought was you, now I think it's me. In other words, you had some molecules in you thought was you, now you exhale, I inhaled it. What you thought was you, now I'm thinking it's me. You understand the problem? We're actually trading, swapping bodies, just sitting in the room like this. We're swapping bodies with each other, just by inhaling and exhaling. So I thought, what you thought was you, now I think it's me. So that's not us, that's the point. What is always you, what has always been you and always will be you, that's the real you. You see? And that's the spirit's part, the Atman. That's the real self. So to then find out what is the highest self-interest of that Atman, that spiritual spark which is sitting in the body, the driver. The driver of the machine, that is the actual self. So the machine, okay, that's all right. You take good care of the machine, but the most important thing is you take care of the driver of the machine. You find out what is his self-interest. Because that machine will come and go, you see. The driver remains. It's like I used to drive a Toyota that I meant to a Volkswagen, I'm driving a, what is it, Honda. Is that me? I was a little baby kid, then I was a teenager, I was a young adult, now I'm an old senior citizen, an old 70-year-old. It's not me, really. It's a body, you see. But what is the actual self within that remains constant? That I just see, what is the interest of that? So that self, the perfection of that self is to reestablish his or her loving relationship with that Supreme Self, the source of all existence. So that is real love for the self, to reconnect with the Supreme Self. And the highest self-interest for all living beings then is to help them reconnect with the Supreme Self. Someone may say, well, that's just some kind of religious, you know, dogma. Feeding the poor is more important. That's an argument we hear many times. Feeding the poor is more important than connecting, than talking about some religious thing of connecting with God. But that means you're seeing the self as a body. You're seeing them as their bodies, and you're not understanding the need of that spirit spark within. It means you don't even see the spirit spark within, you're only seeing the body. But the bodily conception of reality is fallacious, because the body is constantly changing. But we experience, we persons experience a constant, something that is constant, it's vitally changing body. That's the act. We experience our atmas, our spiritual natures, just by our own perceptions. I remember when I was doing this, I remember when I was doing that. I remember when I was a little baby in the crib, looking back in like 1949, looking at one of the early television sets, peering out of my crib at a TV set. Where are the molecules that made of that body? They're long gone. So if you actually want to do good for others, you can't neglect the spirit spark within. You cannot do that. It's actually sheer ignorance to neglect the spirit spark within. Take care of the body, that's all right. It's like, well, our program is that, that everybody in the world should be well fed. That's part of our Krishna conscious philosophy. Everybody, every man, woman, child, and animal on this planet should be well fed every day. That's part of our movement. But it's not only that. We want their spirit souls to be, we want them to reconnect with their divine nature. Because you can feed them nicely, but if they're not connected with them, they'll go down to the animal kingdom, they will allow karma. They will go down and become animals the next day. Is there any other questions? Yes.
You said to us that Krishna created us individually to enjoy us, and enjoy relationship with God, which really struck me, and I make me think, why do we deserve that, to be created by Krishna to have a relationship with us?
Can you explain what your question is, David?
He's saying, why did Krishna create us?
Why?
Why Krishna created us to have relationship with
us? Yeah. There's an example I give many times. I hope you don't mind my repetition. Sometimes I'm criticized for being very repetitive. But when I have a good example, I think it's worth repeating. I used it yesterday. You go to a feast, right? The big feast. You sit down, all right, a feast. And they bring, some rice, and you're waiting for the servers to come with the next prep. And there's no more next prep, there's only rice. You go, what? I thought it was a feast. There's only rice? This is not a feast. So the point is, the more there's variety, there's a saying that variety is the mother of enjoyment. The more there's variety, the more there's enjoyment. So Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Therefore, for the sake of variety, he manifests an unlimited variety of living entities. Every living entity is unique. It's like no two snowflakes are the same. There's no two living, just like you have a unique personality. And there's nobody that's you. You're the only one that's like you. Even your brothers and sisters are, every single jiva is unique. So Krishna has the supreme love feast and enjoying it infinite variety of loving relationships, that each one has a different taste, a different flavor. So that's why Krishna has manifested an infinite number of jivas to expand his enjoying propensity unlimitedly by loving relationships with all so many different varieties. You understand? Does that answer your question? Okay. Any other nobody in at 9 o'clock? Is that the cutoff time? Or 8:30? Who can say?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Okay, we have a few minutes left. Now, any questions, any challenges? Everybody has spoken some language as bogus. Somebody can challenge me. I'm here to try to. We want to understand what is this truth. We want to celebrate the truth. We want to live in the truth. We want to vibrate the truth. You see, that's what we're here for. We're not here for hype or, you know, pulling something over somebody's eyes or something. We want to be. We want enlightenment. We want enlightenment here. So this whole purpose of this class. Is to bring all, is to all come to the platform of perfection of consciousness, so we can see things as they are, we can resonate with things as they are, we can vibrate with things as they are, and actually manifest things as they are at every minute in all time, places, and circumstances. So, question?
So you said Krishna, like a big piece, the variety is the mother of enjoyment.
Yeah.
But one of the names of Krishna is Atmaram, he's self-sufficient himself.
The name is
Atmaram.
Yes, the enjoyer of the self.
So Krishna, he is self-sufficient himself. He doesn't need anything.
Yeah, Krishna. It's a fact. Krishna doesn't really need it, so he can enjoy all by himself. So your question is, why then, if he's Atmaram, why does he even need us?
Yes,
that's the question. It's true. Krishna is the enjoyer of the self. He doesn't really need us. So then, why does he even have us? It's a very interesting question. Even though he is a self-enjoyer, that's a very interesting question. Why does Krishna expand all of us if he's Atmaram? He doesn't really need us.
That is his Atmaram potency.
But
he can do what
we are expansions of himself. We, Chinchaveda Veda philosophy means we are the expanded God form. In other words, Krishna is energy, you're non-different. So everything, there is a original personality of Godhead, and then we are his expanded energy. So in that sense, we are also him. We're not different from him. We are different from him. At the same time, we are his expanded energy. We are simultaneously different and non-different. This is our philosophy, a Chincha Veda Veda Tattva. Simultaneously one and different. So we are and we are not at the same time. Krishna has expanded himself as us. We don't exist outside of Krishna. He has expanded himself as us. So he is the expander Krishna, and we are the expanded Krishna in that sense. Chintaveda Veda Tattva philosophy. We are all his expanded energy, just like the sun. You may see, just like the sun and the sunshine. Is that another old Beatles song? Here comes the sun. It's alright. Now if that had actually been the sun, it would be alright. I'm sitting here in my room and saying, here comes the sun. If it was actually the sun planet, it wouldn't be all right. I'd be dead. You see? But if it was the sunshine, then it's okay. But sun planet, the sun planet entered in my room, it's not okay. I'll be fried to a crisp immediately, you see. But the sunshine, that's okay. So the sunshine is the sun, it's not the sun simultaneously. We are the shine of Krishna. There's Krishna and Krishna shine. The Krishna shine is also Krishna and is not Krishna simultaneously. So in that sense, he is self-enjoying, even with us. We're his expanded energy. So it lives up to him. The Atmaram can be understood in that way. He's enjoying his own expanded energy. That's it. We are his expanded energy. He's not enjoying anything outside of himself, because we are simply his expanded energy. Any of our philosophers, is that confirmed by our learned pundits? That's Archintabedaveda philosophy. Chintabedaveda science. Lord Chaitanya taught this perfection, you see. Shankaracharya said, it's all one. And then the other Vaishnavacharyas came. A Vaishnavacharyas came. And they said, no, it's two. Then Lord Chaitanya amalgamated, no, it's simultaneously one and two at the same time. So our philosophy is simultaneous monism and dualism. Both are true. We embrace both concepts. They're amalgamated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Chinchabhinavedita. The absolute truth is simultaneously, inconceivably one and different. Any other questions?
Yes. All these living entities, like the ones that bite, creeping insects and snakes, and you're allowed to kill them, and they get in your way.
What's it
asked? The living entities. The insects and
the insects,
snakes, scorpions. Anything that bites you.
What about
it? A predator, you're allowed to kill, right?
Anything that bites you need to kill.
Spiders.
As far as possible, you avoid killing anything.
Somebody's aggressor, you need to kill.
It's not
practical. Yeah, aggressor, according to Vedic principles, an aggressor can be killed. Just like one time we had an armed robbery at the temple in Miami. The bandits came with their guns, you know. They had us all on the floor at one point. So our temple president just happened to, he walked into the Prashadam and he was a little surprised to see there was an armed robbery going on in the Prashadam. He just came to the Prashadam for eating Prashadam. No Prashadam, there's an arm. Yeah, all the devotees had held a gun point. But the treasurer had a gun in his desk. He told the treasurer, get the gun and shoot the bastards. I mean, you can use aggression. If there's an aggressor, you can use aggression to defend yourself. Even though we are not aggressors, if an aggressor comes to shoot you, there's a famous quote from Prabhupada. The Prabhupada said, if someone comes to kill me, I will stand over the door with a rock. You can use aggression to protect yourself from an aggressor. That's the basic principle. You can use aggression to protect yourself from an aggressor. The devotee is not an aggressor, but he can defend himself using aggressor. He can even shoot someone if he has to. Someone comes to shoot me, I can shoot them first. That's allowable in Vaishnava principle. Even though we are non-violent, we can use violence if necessary. It's not against Vaishnava principle. By the way, the temple pressure didn't do it. He shot, but he missed. It's quite an amazing story, actually. Sitting there in the prashadam room, our Mangi temple, nice evening, prashadam, hot milk, prashadam, kija, and all of a sudden, two armed bandits walk in. They had the Brahmashrini. Hostage. They had her hand in her mouth, about to patty. She was like, they heard a gun in her head like this. And the other guy had a big rifle with a shotgun. He had a stocking over his head, disguised his identity. He said, everybody get on the floor. But I was sitting on the steps looking down the scene, and I thinking, what is this nonsense? I'm like, the Srinidad! So Bach and Patty didn't no longer have the gun pointed at her, and I had the gun pointed at me. But it kind of threw them off, you know. Because everybody else got on the floor. All the other devotees got down on the floor and offered obeisances. They were all down on the floor, but only me. I yelled out and shamed them. And it kind of bewildered them. They expected everybody to get on the floor. And here was some guy who was yelling some strange sound vibrations. And they were kind of bewildered about the whole thing. Didn't know what to do. And then at that moment, our town president walked into the scene. And he looks at him, and then he turns around to go back to the treasury, and they follow him with the gun. They hit Abhiram on the head with the gun and cut his head. But he was very cool. Abhiram was very cool. They hit him on the head and he was bleeding. He said, he told the treasurer, get the gun. He said it out loud so they could hear it. He was very smart. He said, get the gun and shoot the bastards. And the devil treasurer had the gun right there in the drawer. He grabbed it and he ran, pow, and he missed. But those, they never bothered us ever again. they didn't get one penny, and they didn't, nobody got hurt. They actually, they first went to the kitchen, which was a separate building, and they knocked a Dharma Das on the head. He pretended like he was unconscious so they wouldn't hit him again. They tied him up. They had this all the other thing around the Hare Krishna. They tied him up in ropes. He was tied up with ropes in the kitchen. Supposedly unconscious, tied up with ropes. But that, the GBC really appreciated that. Yelled out in the Shringam to him at that moment. They were just bowing down on the floor like everybody else. So, you know, I wasn't a fighter, I didn't have a gun, but I did have the name of Nishingadin, which is really powerful. So I recommend that if you're in difficulty, the demons are attacking, just yell out Nishingadin, and Nishingadin will work magic, as he did that night. Within 3 minutes after yelling Nishingadin, they were gone. Isn't so the name of Nishingadin is very powerful. You don't have a gun or a knife, or, you know, an atomic bomb or whatever. Just chant Nishingadev. Very good protection. Nishingadev protects his devotees. If in danger you call out his name, he does protect it. And I had an experience, my wife and I actually, we were driving back from preaching, and we came back into the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and there was a huge, there was a big blizzard basically going on, a big snowstorm. And I don't know why I did it, but I decided to take a shortcut on the county road instead of going on the freeway, because it's longer that way. So it was really a stupid mistake. A little two-lane county road that had drop-offs like this on the side of the road. And since we got on that county road, it was pure ice. It was, the whole thing was just, it's like driving on ice. And so our little Toyota, it went, it did a 270 degree spin, and like that, and we were flying off, we were flying through the air, off, there's a big drop up, we were flying through the air, and we knew this is there, we're going to die. Manaji was yelling, Hare Krishna, and I was yelling, Nrsingadev. And the amazing thing was there was so much snow, that we did hit, but we hit a big pile of snow, and it was like landing in a pillow. And we went, the car wasn't even scratched, we weren't even hurt. It was amazing. We had our deities with us, Radha Dhamma were in the car. And it was an amazing thing. And now we're down the bottom of the ditch. But some Christians were out there, some good Samaritan Christians knew this. Actually, many cars went off the road. There was like 20 cars all off the road strip. And so they come out to help us out, you know. So Manaji was running up the bench. She goes, you know, like this, you know. What are you doing? You know, I was kind of stupid, you know. But she was smart. She nearly ran up. And who did they come to first? Us. Even though we're Hare Krishnas, you know, our Hare Krishna garb and everything. They didn't care. They wanted. They were coming out to help the people who were stranded. And she was up there like this. They say the duck who cracks the loudest gets the most crumbs. So she was up there waving her hands, more enthusiastic than anybody else for help, and they came to us first. So 20 Christians got out of their van from the church, you know, they came down. We had a little of those early Toyotas, little tiny, teeny-weeny little Toyotas. They got behind our car and pushed it up the bank. 20 people, they got the car up, and we got back in time for the Sunday feast. So, anyway, whenever you're in difficulty, chant Hare Krishna or chant Nrsingadev, it's amazing. And it really works. If you're ever in danger, in great difficulty, just call the name of the Lord, and I guarantee you, He'll come to your rescue. He will help you out. It's a fact. Then you'll know that God really exists. When you see how He acts, how the miracles happen. So there's nothing else, I guess we can stop a couple minutes early. Here's one.
In this chapter we hear the glories of Lord Shiva as being the supreme called out by Lord Brahma.
I'll see if I can, my hearing aid and for work.
He's saying in this text, so Lord Shiva is being addressed as Supreme Lord.
Yeah, sometimes the great devotee, of course, he is a very powerful personality in this world. It's about, what is that verse from the Brahma Gita? Charanam yatam dhikara vishesha yoga samjayate nitaptakasti heto yasham vatam vidatas samapaktikarya govindamadi guru shangamam vajami. Just this milk is transcended into yoga for the action of acids. How does it go after that?
But the effect.
But the effect, yogurt is neither the same as nor different from its cause milk. So I adore the Lord of whom the state of Shambhu, Lord Shiva, is a transformation to the performance of the work of destruction. So actually, Lord Shiva is a transformation of Krishna himself. Just as milk is transcended yogurt by the action of acids. So Lord Shiva is a very special position. He's a transformation of Krishna. So sometimes he's spoken in a very exalted way because he's actually a transformation of Krishna, according to Lord Brahma's.
He's also called.
Yeah? Yes, David, go ahead. Okay, go ahead. Yeah?
He's also called creator, maintainer, and destroyer as well by Lord Brahma.
Yes,
you
know,
he's the
Vijayamura. Can you speak loudly, please? My hearing aid, I'm deaf.
He's also called creator, destroyer, and maintainer by Lord Brahma. So his question is, why is he called creator, maintainer, and destroyer?
He's also explaining the text that he is a creator and he is a destroyer and all that. So why Lord Brahma is saying to
that? It's an interesting question. I have to do some research to answer in depth. I'm not going to pretend like I have an in-depth answer. I've been reading about that, but I don't recall exactly what I read about it. So you went over my head.
My question?
Yeah.
Isn't it that if you want pacify somebody, you do glorify them?
Yeah.
So Lord Brahma is glorifying Lord Shiva, yeah, although he is not the creator, yeah, supreme creator as Krishna. Yeah. So that to appease him, to give him, like devotee has said, you want to go to somebody to get something done, you glorify 100 times and destroy in your feet. And then
The thing is, I'll be happy to research. I'd like to know the answer myself, and I'd like to research it. If you send me an email, sda@bhaktaham.com, I'll be happy to answer that in the email and to do some research. I'd like to know the answer myself. Your question is great. I love your question. I have the same question myself. So I would like, if you send me an email, I will research it and give you an answer. And do when I get some time. I got 200 emails in my inbox right now, but I will definitely answer you in detail from what Prabhupada explains in this connection, because I'd like to know myself. It's a very good question. So feel free to write me. bakthome.com. sda@bakthome.com. Okay, so our time is up, and we thank you all very much for tuning in. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.